I'd like to ask you to turn to Exodus chapter 21. Exodus 21. First of all, we want to pick up where we left off last Saturday night, and that was chapter 20. We looked at the Ten Commandments, and we want to look at chapter 21 as he goes now beyond these commandments that he gave to the children of Israel to now the laws that breaks down into their daily life, or a civil law in a sense, of how to get along with people. These are the judgments which you shall set before them. If you buy a Hebrew servant, he shall serve 6 years, and in the seventh he shall go out free and pay nothing. If he comes in by himself, he shall go out by himself, and if he comes in married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master has given him a wife, and she has borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's, and he shall go out by himself. But if the servant plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free. Then his master shall bring him to the judges, and he shall also bring him to the door, or to the doorpost. And his master shall pierce his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him forever. So here is a great picture of a servant. Paul the Apostle in the New Testament said that we are bondservants of Christ. We've chosen to give our will to his will, to live by his commandments. And here we see that this man would say, well, I love my master, and I don't want to leave my master. So all he'd have to do is to go to the front door of the house with the judges there, and the master would come, and they would take an awl with his earlobe and nail it to the door, and they'd puncture the ear. And then a ring could be put through it, an earring, and this would signify that this servant is a servant by free will and free choice. He wasn't born into it. He wasn't forced into it. It was a free will choice that he made. And with this free will choice, it was made out of love. And out of love, the master marked his servant and received him into his family. Now, it is interesting to note the word judges is the Hebrew word Elohim. This is the same word from Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the word Elohim is God with plural deity in it. And this is the same word that has been misused by some of the faith ministries that would take this and two or three other verses where the scriptures say, are you not gods? It's the same word judges, but it's little g's. And in no way is he saying that you are creators, that there were people that had the power to be Father, Son, or Holy Ghost, or God the Creator, but that we were in the sense, like God, that we could judge things. We could judge right, we could judge wrong. And so the authority that was given by the Creator to man to have a position of free will, but also a determining will that could discern between right and wrong to be a judge is how this word is used. It's not used that you, as some would say, that you can become a god or we are gods. And that's not how that is used here. So his master shall bring him to the judges, and he shall also bring him to the door, to the doorpost, and his master shall pierce his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him forever. Now if a man sells his daughter to be a female slave, she shall not go out as the male slaves do. If she does not please her master, who has betrothed her to himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. He shall have no right to sell her to a foreign people, since he has dealt deceitfully with her. And if he has betrothed her to his son, he shall deal with her according to the custom of daughters. If he takes another wife, he shall not diminish her food, her clothing, and her marriage rights. And if he does not do these three for her, then she shall go out free without paying money. Now, dealing with physical violence. He who strikes a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death. However, if he did not lie in wait, but God delivered him into his hand, then I will appoint for you a place where he may flee. And this is a very interesting thought, because God is going to show the city of refuge a little further on. The city of refuge was a place that if a person had killed another person, unpremeditated murder, and he could make it to that city of refuge, then the elders of that city were responsible to protect that person until the trial could go forth. But basically, while he was in that city, he was safe. So God says, if he did not lie in wait, so premeditated murder, to think out, to plot, to plan how you're going to kill somebody else is capital punishment. Now, Western civilization is built upon the Judeo-Christian ethic, or basically the Ten Commandments and the laws of Moses. And it's these laws that our judicial system is very heavy with, along with the Roman jurisprudence system, such as double jeopardy. If your life was on trial for murder and you were found innocent, you could not in Rome, nor let alone here in the United States, be put back on trial for that same thing in your life, be put in a double jeopardy, that you've been found innocent. And so we know that when Jesus was arrested, that he was found innocent three times, once by Pontius Pilate, once by Herod. He was taken to Herod, brought back to Pontius Pilate, and his life was put into double jeopardy, but yet they still went ahead and crucified him. So here we see that God delivered him, but God delivered him into his hand. Then I will appoint for you a place where he may flee. Interesting concept that God could deliver somebody into the hands of a murderer. That's kind of a frightening thought. Or that God just said, I give up on this person. This person wants nothing to do with me. Now, another example of this would be the New Testament in Romans chapter 13, that all power and all government has been anointed or ordained by God. In the Living Bible, it says the police officer is ordained of God. I counseled a police officer one evening for about 4 or 5 hours, 4 hours, I think it was, he was having some flashbacks, though he didn't know that he was having flashbacks, he was just having problems. But what came out several times was that 18 years earlier, as a rookie, his first week on duty, he shot and killed a man that robbed a liquor store and then attacked two or three police officers with a weapon, and he was standing there and he shot and killed this guy, and that is still on his heart and his mind 18 years later. Though he has gone up the ranks, it was justifiable homicide, it was a lawful use of deadly force, he was in the right to do it. This person had perpetrated a felony, but yet the human side was still feeling the pain of it. But when you stop and look at this, that this man had a law of crime that God probably turned him over to the authorities. And God says, unless I've turned him over, then this person's going to get a second chance. But God goes way beyond two chances and three chances. I think you can all agree to that, can't you? Or we'd all be cinder just blowing in the wind right now if he didn't keep forgiving. But if a man acts with premeditation against his neighbor to kill him by treachery, you shall take him from my altar that he may die. So God is the one that instigated capital punishment. And capital punishment is always a deterrent to wickedness and evilness in a society to realize there is retribution for your actions and that you are responsible and accountable for your actions. And God says so here that then this person can die. So capital punishment was actually instigated by the Lord. He who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. Now that's pretty flat out straight, don't you think? No juvenile delinquency problems in those days. There were no juvenile halls. There were no juvenile officers. There was no truant officers. You respected your mother and your father. Growing up, I could not have ever imagined saying an unkind word to my mother, ever. Could not even begin to imagine it. Couldn't imagine a kid ever talking back to his mother or father. But you turn on television and you see derogatory sitcoms, they call them, with canned laughter because it's not funny. And it's sons and daughters talking back to their mothers or their fathers, making fun of them. And kids pick this stuff up, how to sass back. And God says, no way. He who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. And a strong society has to have respect for its elders. A weak society doesn't have respect for its elders, and its youth run the show. And that's like having a house way out of order where a brat runs the show and mom and dad are afraid to discipline the child. And so God's very adamant about that. A mother and father deserve respect, and a child should never hit their parent. He who kidnaps a man and sells him, or if he is found in his hand, shall surely be put to death. So kidnapping was a capital punishment. Our kidnapping rates were down when it was a capital punishment. When it was released from that, kidnapping went up. God says that kidnapping is a capital punishment. And again, he's showing a strong society will have respect for human life. That's what he's saying here. That a person's body, a person's person, his personality, His whole identity is something given to him by God. And nobody has the right to steal that person and hold him for ransom or for any other reason. And God says that's a capital punishment crime. Now, he who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. So if you swore at your mother or your father, if you before he says that if you strike them, but now he's letting you know that respect in the family has to go even stronger than physical contact. It cannot be verbal abuse against an elder. You must respect your mother and father with your words also. I paraphrased this when my kids were all growing up, our kids were growing up. I gave them a little leniency with me, you know, because kids like to wrestle dad. And I give them a little leniency, especially the boys. But there's only so far they could go, and if they ever disrespected, and if they ever disrespected their mother, I had a saying for them. If you ever curse your mother or you ever hit your mother, your teeth will be smiling at you from across the street. It's basically the paraphrase of this verse right here. He who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. We need to honor our mother and father. In fact, the New Testament puts it in a very beautiful way quoting it. St. Paul said, honor your mother and father, for it is the first of the commandments that promises long life. Isn't that interesting? Short life if you break this. The other ones, commit adultery, doesn't say you're going to be, you know, you got an opportunity to repent or something here. But right here, a murderer could be manslaughter. He can run and be saved. But if you strike your mother and you curse your father, you're dead. You have a very short life. You're not going to make it into your teen years. If men contend with each other and one strikes the other with a stone or with his fist and he does not die, but he is confined to his bed. So now you get into a barroom brawl. You pick up a chair. You hit somebody. You pick up a rock out in the road and you hit somebody in the side of the head. You use a weapon and the person doesn't die. In verse 19, he tells you what will happen here. If he rises again and walks about outside with his staff, then he who struck him shall be acquitted. Otherwise, he could be limping. He's got his staff. But he shall only pay for the loss of his time and shall provide for him to be thoroughly healed. So, accountability again. You're going to be a hothead. You're going to pay for it. You're going to die if the person you hit dies. But if he doesn't die, you just don't walk away. You're going to pay for all of his medical bills, and you're going to be financially responsible until the day this person is 100% cured. Or if they're not 100% cured, you're still responsible. So what he's building in, remember, they're out in the wilderness. They haven't come into Canaan land yet. He's building ethics and morals. He's building a justice system. He's building a law for them. But he's building a moral fiber inside of them that is saying we are all accountable. Each man can't do what is right in his own eyes. And each man can't go his own way. We have to be together. I love the signs that are coming out more and more. United we stand. And nowhere does it say in diversity we stand. United we stand. Not by being individuals going our own direction with our own causes. It's when a country is together and united with who they are that things will happen for them. And God is laying this foundation very subtly into their hearts. If a man beats his male or his female servant with a rod, so that he dies under his hand, he shall surely be punished. Notwithstanding, if he remains alive a day or two, he shall not be punished, for he is his property. So, it sounds kind of crazy, doesn't it? He beats him, and he dies on the spot, then he is going to be punished for it. But if the servant lived one or two days, 24 to 48 hours, then he's off the hook. And why? I don't know, other than it could say that maybe it wasn't a really violent situation where he lost complete control. I don't know. But he does give him some leniency there, and he underlines, for he is his property. And it's interesting how that with the New Testament, it shows us this validity of individualism, but yet submission to one another, submit one to another in the fear of God, the book of Ephesians chapter 5 says. And on one hand, you had a white man named Dr. David Livingstone living in Africa, working with the blacks over there, educating them, teaching them medicine, teaching them how to plant crops and to irrigate. At the same time, the Arab slave traders were capturing the blacks and taking them to the British ships on the west coast of Africa, and they would sail to the east coast of the United States and be let off there in exchange for cotton and goods that would give the slaves to the south, and the cotton and the goods would go to England and drop off in exchange for goods, and then that would go ship would go back and basically worked a triangle, a trilateralist business group there. And while the white man, at one time in his life, David Livingstone went 13 years without ever seeing a white face. But he was so loved and admired by the African people. At the same time, he had a white man that was raised in a log cabin named Abraham Lincoln that taught himself to be educated, to be a lawyer. He ran for the president of the United States. And one man loses his life in Africa working with those people and trying to keep them from being slaves, and the other man loses his life in the United States for trying to free the slaves. And so both of them were under strong conviction of the Holy Ghost that freedom was very important. Jesus said, "You'll know the truth will make you free, and whom the Son sets free is free indeed." So both of these men, President of the United States Abraham Lincoln and Dr. David Livingstone, both very smart and intelligent men, but very compassionate men, but both Bible believers believed that people needed to be free and had the right to be free. And so in these early days, there was a slavery situation, but that had to be abolished. And how that all came about and God let it go, I don't understand that part yet. If men fight and they hurt a woman with child so that she gives birth prematurely, yet no harm follows, he shall surely be punished accordingly as the woman's husband imposes on him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. But if any harm follows, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Now, this is the Old Testament law. There is a new law, and it's the law of love. Love covers a multitude of sin. And so here we stop and we look at this. Two men are fighting. It doesn't say if one of them is the husband or not. But standing somewhere nearby is a pregnant lady. And in this fight, the lady gets hit. She goes into premature delivery, and the baby is born prematurely, but it is a healthy child. Then there's no punishment here. But if the baby were to die or be deformed in some way, then there would be a retribution here. And this is very severe, extremely severe. I read in the newspaper last week, the Taliban had found guilty a 14-year-old boy who apparently was a sexual predator and an older man, 40s or 50s, I forget which, that were to be strangled as their punishment and then to be chopped up into pieces and then to put into vats of acid, all the pieces, because this is what they did to their young boys that they raped and they murdered. They strangled them, they chopped them up, and they put them in acid. So this was the law for the Taliban, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. It's interesting, the article was telling that they found the boy and the man both hung in their cells, apparently suicide. They didn't want to go through this retribution. And so this was a very stringent thing. If a pregnant lady were disrupted in her delivery of the child, then there would be a tremendous price to pay, and that the husband would be the one who would make the decision of what the price would be. If a man, verse 26, strikes the eye of his male or female servant and destroys it, he shall let him go free for the sake of his eye. And if he knocks out the tooth of his male or his female servant, he shall let him go free for the sake of his tooth. Now that's interesting. You poke out his eye, you knock out a tooth, you're free. But you can beat him up near death, and if he dies within 2 days, you're free. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense here, but this is how it's working out to start with. And then God's got a great plan by the time you get to the end of Exodus. If an ox gores a man, now this isn't Al Gore, this is ox gore. If an ox gores a man or a woman to death, then the ox shall surely be stoned, and its flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall be acquitted. But if the ox tended to thrust with its horn in times past, otherwise he has a history that he's a wild-mannered ox and he roams the neighborhood and he attacks people, and it has been made known to his owner, otherwise he's been warned, you know, your ox tackled my kid the other day, or he butted heads with my donkey or something, and you've told the owner, and it has not kept it confined. Otherwise, the owner has responsibility to provide protection for his neighbor, but he also has accountability to his neighborhood, that you just can't be the bully in the neighborhood. And so he says that he should have had him penned up or confined, but he has not kept him confined, so that it has killed a man or a woman. The ox shall be stoned, and its owner also shall be put to death. So now it's showing accountability. It's much like you have a party at your house, and it's all teenagers, and a teenager goes out and gets in an accident and dies. You're now, according to law, liable. And I think that's a great law. Adults should have a little more smarts than letting their teenage kids. And I've heard this from parents before. I'd rather have them drinking at home than going somewhere where I don't know they're drinking. What a lame excuse. They shouldn't be drinking at all. You know, that's a pretty weak parent that has that as a defense. But this is what he says here, is that if there's been a history of this and the owner didn't do something about it and somebody dies, not only is the ox going to die, but the owner is going to face capital punishment. If there is imposed on him a sum of money, then he shall pay to redeem his life whatever is imposed on him, whether it has gored a son or gored a daughter. According to this judgment, it shall be done to him. If the ox gores a male or a female servant, he shall give to their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. Now, 30 shekels, you know, or 30 pieces of silver is what was given for Jesus by Judas Iscariot. If a man opens a pit, or if a man digs a pit and does not cover it, and an ox or a donkey falls in it, the owner of the pit shall make it good. He shall give money to their owner, but the dead animal shall be his. If one man's ox hurts another's so that it dies, then they shall sell the live ox and divide the money from it, and the dead ox they shall also divide. For if it was known that the ox tended to thrust in times past, and its owners has not kept it confined, he shall surely pay ox for ox, and the dead animal shall be his own. But if a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it, he shall restore five oxen for an ox, and four sheep for sheep. So now you realize that thievery is something that it's horrible in our society. If you were to go talk to the general managers of the Nordstrom stores in San Diego and the Macy's and the major department stores, you would find out that people coming in stealing is just, it's horrible. I mean, the people, especially stores like Nordstrom's where they don't ask for the receipts. And you could bring something in, you know. I was out with the police one time, and we were called to Nordstrom's at UTC. And it was middle of the afternoon, and they had arrested a woman that had actually watched her steal some clothes and then come back into the store with the same clothes and cash them in to get the money. And they arrested her. And so we came in, the officer and I, and we were there with the security guys, started talking, and this lady confessed that she had a partner. And the partner was in such and such car out in the parking lot. So this cop said, "Would you go out, Mike, find that lady? And then I'll be out there to help you in a few minutes." I said, "Okay." So I went out there as he did the paperwork on her, and I found that other car and the lady sitting in it. And so he came out, and we arrested the lady and called for backup to take them to jail. But as we went through the car, we found a notebook from every Nordstrom store in the West Coast, from Seattle down here to San Diego, with every department manager and every store manager of every store and every phone number, everything they needed to know about Nordstrom's. And what we uncovered that day was a heroin ring in San Diego working out of North Park. And that these women were part of a group that were heroin addicts, that they got their heroin by stealing clothes from Nordstrom's and then taking and getting the cash, and then giving the cash to the drug dealers, and the drug dealers gave them their heroin. And that all came out of a shoplifting deal. Well, I had dinner one night with the vice president, Loyal Nordstrom, and her husband. We had dinner with him one night, and he said, "You know, we do get a lot of stuff." I told him that story because it happened the day before. And I said, "You know, how much do you lose?" And he said, "We lose only about 2% with our plan that we have. The basic thing is this: we trust our customers. And we know that there's about a 2% group of crooks that come through our stores, and that we would rather trust our customers and believe them that they came in and they bought that there, and that's why that happens." But stealing is something that's just, it just drains all your businesses wherever you work. The military, billions of dollars are stolen from the military. Another way that it's stolen is not just taken, but the $600 toilet seats. You know, the military is always charged by these companies these ridiculous amounts, $200 hammers, and, you know, $40 screwdrivers, and you can steal in so many ways, and that's a sin to steal. And you can steal by lying on your tax returns, and that's wrong. And you don't want to be a thief. And so God says stealing is not acceptable in a godly society. If a man steals an ox or a sheep, slaughters it, and sells it, he has to give five times back for what he took. And if the thief is found breaking in, and he's struck so that he dies, there shall be no guilt for his bloodshed. And our law of deadly force in the state of California is pretty much the same thing. If you were to shoot someone, or to beat them up and kill them in your front yard because they were prowling in your front yard or your backyard, you're going to be arrested for murder, and you're probably going to go to jail for it because unjustifiable homicide. The law of homicide is not on your side here. If the person breaks in and gets inside your house, now you are justified. But they would even question, you know, did this person have a gun? Did they have a knife? Did they have a weapon? And but the law is the same as this right here. If the person breaks in to your house, the state of Utah, for instance, has a belief that you deserve the right to have weapons, and you can carry a weapon. And many of the states, in fact, are getting more lenient. And wherever they have given concealed weapons permits to people that have gone through thorough background checks, for instance, in Utah, it is a felony to break into somebody's house. So now, a felony means if you're breaking in, you're going to go to jail if you're caught, but the person in the house is justifiable because you're a felon. You're not just a misdemeanor just prowling through somebody's house. See, the law is there to protect the innocent people and the good people. And here he says if he's breaking in and he is coming into the house and he's struck so he dies, you're not guilty of the bloodshed. If the sun has risen on him, and there shall be guilt for his bloodshed, he shall make full restitution. If he is nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. If the theft is certainly found alive in his hand, if it's an ox, donkey, or sheep, he'll restore double. If a man causes a field or vineyard to be grazed and lets loose his animal and feeds in another man's field, he shall make restitution from the best of his own field and the best of his own vineyard. But if fire breaks out and catches in thorns so that the stacked grain, standing grain, or the field is consumed, he who kindled the fire shall surely make restitution. If a man delivers to his neighbor money or articles to keep, and it is stolen out of the man's house, the thief is found, he'll pay double. So somebody gives you their stereo, guy breaks in, steals your stereo, that guy, because you're now looking like the bad guy, you're going to have to pay back double for stealing. If the thief is not found, then the master of the house will be brought to the judges to see whether he has put his hand into his neighbor's good. For any kind of trespass, if it concerns a donkey, an ox, a sheep, or clothing, for any kind of lost thing which another claims to be his, the cause of both parties will come to the judges. Whomever the judges condemn shall pay double to his neighbor. And if a man delivers to his neighbor a donkey, a sheep, an ox, any animal to keep, and it dies, it's hurt or driven away, no one seeing it, then an oath of the Lord shall be between the two. And see, here's love working in the neighborhood now. That he has not put his hand to his neighbor's good, and the owner of it shall accept that. He shall not make it, and he shall not make it good. Otherwise, he's going to take his word for it. But if in fact it is stolen from him, he shall make restitution to the owner. If it's torn in pieces by a beast, then he shall bring it as evidence, and he shall not make good what was torn. You remember with the sons of Jacob, when they put Joseph in the pit, they took that coat of many colors, they killed a goat, and they put blood all over it, and they brought it back to the father and said, "Here's the evidence. We didn't lay hand to your son. This beast killed your son." And they're going back to here. If any man borrows anything from his neighbor, becomes injured or dies, the owner of it not being with it, he shall surely make it good. I had a man tell me one time, he lives by a principle, if he can't afford to buy it, don't borrow it. And the law says if you borrow it and it breaks down, you got to buy him a new one. So you may want to go to your garages and get those lawnmowers and everything you borrow from the neighbor and give them to him tonight. If a man entices a virgin who is not betrothed and lies with her, he shall surely pay the bride for price for her to be his wife. And if her father utterly refuses to give her to him, he shall pay money according to the bride price of virgins. You shall not permit a sorceress to live. So a witch. And the word here is the same for drugs. So a sorceress, casting spells. I fear for our country when we have these psychic hotlines and things, these sorceresses that are selling medium spirits and lies. Whoever lies with an animal, bestiality, shall surely be put to death. That's a capital punishment. He who sacrifices to any god except to Jehovah, to the Lord only, he shall be utterly destroyed. You shall neither mistreat a stranger nor oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. You shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. The book of James, what does it say? Pure religion and undefiled is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction. And that's where they get it, right here from the law. And that's pure religion. If you're serving widows and fatherless children, then God's going to bless you. If you afflict them in any way, and they cry at all to me, I will surely hear their cry. My wrath will become hot, and I will kill you with the sword. Your wives shall be widows, your children fathers. You know, don't ever touch a widow's mite. Don't ever touch a widow. Don't have anything to do with a widow, you know. It just scares the dickens out of me when widows come and say, I'd like to give some money to the church. That frightens me. It just scares the dickens out of me. In fact, a lady, the way we even started was that a lady's husband was killed in a private airplane crash when we bought the North Park Theater. And we didn't have any money. We just started as a church. And she said, I'd like to give you the money from the insurance. I said, no way. You're a widow. It says in the Bible. She said, but I know it'll be used for God. And I said, no way. I don't want it. She said, well, how about if I put it up for a loan? I said, okay, we'll go to a bank. If you want to put it up for a loan and you get interest, that's fine. And so she got interest and we bought the theater. So, if you lend money to any of my people who are poor among you, you shall not be like a money lender to him. You shall not charge him interest. If you ever take your neighbor's garment as a pledge, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down. For that is the only covering. It is his garment for his skin. What will he sleep in? And it will be that when he cries to me, I will hear, for I am gracious. Underline that, would you? I am gracious. God says that about himself. He is a gracious God. And you need to be gracious people. We can learn it from our Father. You shall not revile God, nor curse a ruler of your people. You shall not delay to offer the first of your ripe produce and your juices. The firstborn of your sons you shall give to me, not in human sacrifice, but in dedication to service. Likewise, you shall do with your oxen and your sheep. I don't know if you ever saw the video that Raul Reese and I did for our doctorate, but it was called Venture of Faith. We have it in the bookstore. And it tells the history of the Calvary Chapel movement up to that time, when we graduated and did that video. And it tells about my pastor, Chuck Smith, how that his mother was home alone one day, and Chuck's older sister, Virginia, was dying. And she didn't know what to do, and her husband was gone. And she grabbed the little girl and ran down the street and ended up in a Pentecostal church, the Four Square Church, and told the pastor, please, would you pray? And the pastor prayed for Virginia Smith, and she was healed, and she lived, and she should have died. And Mrs. Smith said that I will give you my next child to be your servant. And it was Chuck. And she started teaching Chuck the scriptures when he was a baby and talking the verses into his ears as a baby and rocking him to sleep at 1 and 2 and 3 years old and had him quoting and reading from the Bible when he was 3 or 4 years old. So in closing here, he says to him, you shall not delay. Likewise, you shall do with your oxen, your sheep. It shall be with its mother 7 days. On the eighth day, you shall give it to me. You shall be holy men to me. Underline that, gentlemen. You shall be holy men to me, and you shall not eat meat torn by beasts in the field, and you shall not throw it to the dogs.